Political Watch with Graham Richardson.
It is this time each and every Friday afternoon that we catch up with Graham Richardson. Gee, I was only thinking the other day, we've been talking to Richo for a long, long time each and every Thursday afternoon. And we've got a couple of questions for him from people this afternoon that have rung in. Universal pension is one in particular. So we'll catch up with Richo now. He's right here. Hello, Graham. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's good. I've had a few people call in this afternoon, and someone called in and said, can you ask Graham Richardson a question for me? I said, okay. So that resulted in other people ringing up and saying, yeah, I agree with this. Richard, what's your thoughts on a universal pension?
Well, I think that... when you've got a system as we have that's been developed over years, I wouldn't change it. You can't have a universal pension because there are too many different needs, too many different incomes, too many people with different assets. I just don't think it works. I don't think in the end you can make that fair.
There you go. Richo's answered the question for those people that wanted to know about universal pension. Let's talk about what's going on in the news this week. Well, we started the week, Anthony Albanese met face-to-face with the Ukrainian president, Zelensky. It was a historic first trip by an Australian prime minister to the war-torn country. And, of course, we pledged $100 million as an assistance package. He's copped a bit of flack for that. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it was absolutely the right thing to do. And of course we should be assisting them. They're resisting Putin, and I think that means they're on the side of the angels. So you do whatever you can for them. I think he should be congratulated for it. And I'm not saying that out of political bias. I very strongly believe that we ought to be showing the people of the Ukraine that we are with them, because we need to encourage the international community to stand up and say the same thing.
Richo, I know that, you know, this has been all over the papers and the radio and the TV this week, that, you know, Anthony Albanese has been copping flak for, you know, being overseas, and there was even an article in one of the papers this week about, you know, how many thousands of kilometres he's travelled and how many days he's been away and all this sort of thing. I see the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, had a crack at the opposition after accusations that Anthony Albanese was missing in action at the New South Wales floods during a diplomatic trip to Europe. I mean, that's how low it got this week, as in people having a crack at him for not being there in reference to the New South Wales floods, he being overseas.
Yeah, I think it just gets to a ridiculous point. And I think most people understand that. I don't think you'll find Anthony's going to be a tripaholic. He's not like that at all. He much prefers to be at home. But when you're the leader of Australia, you do have to make the odd trip. It's impossible not to. So I'm not going to condemn him for this. I think he's doing what he has to do, and he'll make sure over time that he spends the minimum amount overseas that he can.
It's fair to say that if Scott Morrison had won the election in May, that he would have gone overseas as well and attended the NATO conference. That's a fair comment, is it not?
Of course. It wouldn't matter who was the leader. They've got to go.
Scott Morrison wouldn't have been able to then go to France and meet with the president there and mend bridges. Anthony Albanese was able to do that. And do that he did. And it looks like there are, you know, there's been a few bridges that have been, have been burnt, that relationships that need to be fixed. And that is one of the goals of the Albanese government.
Yeah, I think that the Albanese government has to fix relations with two countries as a priority, France and China, obviously for different reasons, but it needs to be done.
Do you think, Having said that, right, I know that Penny Wong is, fingers crossed, on the sidelines of the G20 today, in fact, having talks with a minister from China in reference to our trade relationship. Yes, it needs to be repaired. Do you see that happening, or do you think that China will be unreasonable with what they want for example, trade sanctions to be lifted?
Well, I think the Chinese will lift them. But, you know, when they've lost faith and their pride is hurt, they have to show it. It's just part of being Chinese, I think. So they're doing exactly what you'd expect them to do, but they'll also do what you expect them to do and call it off in the near future.
So you think, that begs another question. You say you'll think they'll call off the trade sanctions in the near future. Do you think it will go back to what it was before?
Well, I think it can be.
Right.
I think, you know, you've got to have these tiffs occasionally, as each side, has to make its own position clear. But I think in international diplomacy, you expect these things. You also have ways of getting around them. And you also make sure that even while these disputes are going on, you've got back channel conversations happening as well. So you keep the door ajar.
Let's talk the floods. I mean, some of the rain that fell, for example, Taree in the mid-north coast of New South Wales registered its heaviest daily rainfall on record. They clocked 305 mil of rain between 9 o'clock Wednesday and 9 o'clock Thursday. Bulga near Singleton on the banks of the Hunter River also reached its highest river level since 1952, 9.1 metres. I saw some figures on the south coast. Fox Ground near Berry, lovely place. In 24 hours, or yeah, 24, I think it was 48 hours, they received 378 mils of rain. It's rain like we've never seen before, and as a result of that, it's floods like we've never seen before this week, Richo, in New South Wales.
Yeah, it's just incredible. It's almost like you've got a waterfall falling down, not just rain. It's quite extraordinary. I feel for the people who've lost their houses and in these floods, because when you go back to the house, it's a hell of a job to clean up a stinking, rotten, muddy mess.
It is. But Anthony Albanese was quick. Obviously, they're out and about on the hustings. He and the Premier of New South Wales, Dominic Perrottet, what's today, Friday? I think they're out Wednesday. And they announced, as in the Prime Minister announced, that he would make disaster recovery payments available to New South Wales flood victims from 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. He did that on Wednesday. So they were quick to act and get help out there, financial help out there, much more than what happened last time under the coalition government.
Yeah, well, actually, and you're right. And I think Dominic Perrottet deserves particular thanks here and congratulations, because he showed that he's not interested in partisan party politics. He's more interested in helping the people of his state. I think Perrottet's come out of this looking $1 million.
Do you think it's time for people on both sides of politics to sit down and talk about the raising the walls at Warragamba? Because there's, stories in the Telegraph today that Chris Minns is not too sure that that's the way to go.
Well, I don't know if there's any other way to go. That's the problem. I mean, there are difficulties associated with raising the level of Warragamba. But I think they pale in comparison to the kind of things you might fix. So as far as I'm concerned, up goes the wall.
The Treasurer Jim Chalmers said the country was strong enough to withstand a second consecutive 0.5 percentage point increase in official interest rates, which happened on Tuesday afternoon. Economists said the RBA would push ahead with a similar lift when it meets again in August. There's been criticism of the RBA, and that criticism has been that they left these interest rate increases too late, and therefore there have been too many and too big. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that's probably a legitimate criticism, but that having been said, what the task before the RBA is an impossible one, because all you can do is make the best guess of what's going to happen in the next quarter, the next half, whatever. You don't know it. You can only just gather the information that's available and make a prediction. Those predictions are never going to be exactly right. And our reserve has a pretty good record of getting them right. So I'm not going to be joining in any criticism of them for getting one wrong.
Richard, one of the headlines that took my eye this week was Australia's relationship with Russia. It said Australia's relationship with Russia has reached its lowest peak in decades. And this was according to the Russian ambassador to Australia, Alexei Pavlovsky. He declared that this week. Have we ever had really good relationships with Russia?
Well, I think we've had really good relationships with Russia, but it's very hard to keep them going under Putin. If the bloke continues to make a thoroughgoing bastard of himself, it is incumbent upon us to react. We can't just leave it alone.
True.
So I don't think anyone enjoys that. It's not something we want. We'd much rather calm, decent, good relations. But it's hard to be having decent relations with an indecent person.
Can you see Putin actually attending the G20?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Certainly. Can you actually see Putin attending the G20? Because there's talk that he will.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't surprise me if he did. But I don't think there'll be a warm welcome.
No, not at all. It just astounds me that he's got the you-know-whatses to go. Let's talk a couple of things before I let you go. Firstly, Nick Kyrgios, he's now in the Wimbledon final. It's, I suppose, the luck of the draw with Rafa bowing out. Are you a Kyrgios supporter?
In a word, no.
Will you be supporting him winning on Sunday night, though, as an Australian?
Oh, look, I'll be barracking for him because he is an Australian, and I'll always barrack for an Australian. But you do so with a somewhat heavy heart because he's been such a pest for so long. And it's more than an irritation with this bloke. It's a shocking example to young people who might want to take up sport to see him carrying on the way he does. So I just hope in the final he acts like a decent fella.
Yeah, you and me too. And lastly, Boris Johnson. Are you surprised he went as quick as he did?
No, not really. Because the pressure's been building on him for a long time, for at least 6 months. So when you say as quick as he did, he could have left a lot earlier.
Okay. We were talking to Keith Suter yesterday and or the day before, and I said to Keith at the end of the chat, I said, "Well, Dr. Keith, we'll talk soon." And he was thinking it might be weeks before he resigns, but here it was, less than 24 hours later, and Boris Johnson has resigned. Now it's got to the stage where there are people that don't want him to stay on in the role as caretaker PM as well. They're not happy about him doing that, so he may be gone quicker than he thinks.
Yeah, well, Keith is a brilliant guy who gets a lot of things right because of the amount of work he puts in. An extraordinary fella. So he's someone you should never second guess.
Absolutely. Are you going to have your fourth, or have you already had it? I suppose someone in your position, have you already had your fourth booster shot?
I'm sorry, mate. I'm really apologising today, but there's so much ambient noise here. I missed that again.
You're obviously having lunch. I hope it's an enjoyable lunch.
Oh, mate, I'm having a great lunch at the Malaya, overlooking the harbour. And my company, you know, the people with me are a bit ordinary, but I can't help that. Sometimes you just have to slum it.
All right, Richo, I'll let you get back to your company and enjoy your lunch.
Okay, mate.
Thank you, mate.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you next week, Richo. Bye-bye.